Welcome to the midweek Mission Ridge podcast known as Footnotes. Footnotes is here to give you some of the stuff that we didn't have time to cover in the sermon and encourage you to dig in deeper as you study the text. So let's dive in and check out what's in the footnotes. Welcome to another episode of Footnotes. This is our weekly addendum to the sermon, things that we couldn't cover, things that we wanted to bring up that we didn't touch on Sunday. I am Paul Patterson, your host this week. I am joined with Logan Daly.
Yo!
And Rob Correll.
Hello.
And a special guest who's pretty hot, Molly Patterson.
Hi.
She's making a face at me.
As always.
We figured since we're talking about relationships, we probably should have a girl here, right?
Well, I don't know. It's worked well for me with relationships not to have a girl involved.
To be clear, who do you text when you want someone to remind you about things or to heckle you?
The pastor's wife.
Who do you like to watch Doctor Who with?
Anybody and everybody.
Okay. Anyway, so this week, we were talking about Jacob's life, and we tried to cover a minor chunk of his life.
Like the whole thing.
Other than his birth. Like birth, I'm not entirely sure. Does anyone know how old he was when he stole the blessing? Is there any indication in the text? I don't think there is.
I don't think there was.
He's old enough to leave home and to go get a wife.
So 15.
Ish. 16, 17, 18. He's probably not 30.
No, probably not. Probably pretty young.
Yeah,
still.
20 or under, I would guess. Anyway, so from then to basically the end of his life, we touched on a little story in the end of Genesis. So there was a lot that we kind of skipped over.
Yep.
So one that we talked about just in passing was when he is working for Laban. He's already got his two wives. He's got Rachel and he's got Leah. And he wants to leave, to go back home. And Laban says, basically, what can I pay you to make you stay? And Jacob enters into an arrangement with Laban, saying, let me go through your flocks. I'll pick out the spotted ones.
Mm-hmm.
I forget the exact verbiage there. But I'll pick out the spotted ones, and you let me keep those, and I'll set those aside so you know that they're my sheep. You know that I'm not going to steal any or play any tricks.
Yep.
And that will be my wage. And so he takes these sheep, he sends them, he sets up camp about 3 days away from Laban, and there's this weird story about sticks. He sets up sticks. And I wanted to find, let me read what he does. So that day Laban removed the male goats that were striped and spotted and all the female goats that were speckled and spotted. Every one that had white on it and every lamb that was black and put them in charge of his sons. And he set a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob passed through the rest of Laban's flock. Then Jacob took fresh sticks of poplar and almond and plane trees and peeled white streaks in them, exposing the white of the sticks. He set the sticks that he peeled in front of the flocks in the troughs, that is, the watering places where the flocks came to drink. And since they bred when they came to drink, the flocks bred in front of the sticks, and so the flocks brought forth striped, speckled, and spotted. And Jacob separated the lambs and set the faces of the flocks toward the striped, and all the black in the flock of Laban. He put his own droves apart and did not put them with Laban's flock. Whenever the stronger of the flock were breeding, Jacob would lay the sticks in the troughs before the eyes of the flock, that they might breed among the sticks, but for the feebler of the flock, he would not lay them there. So the feebler would be Laban's and the stronger Jacob's. Thus the man increased greatly, had large flocks, female servants and male servants, and camels and donkeys. So he does something with sticks and separates different sheep and goats apart from each other, the stronger from the weak and the spotted from the not.
Yep.
And somehow he gets stronger sheep and goats and more sheep and goats. So the question is, what the heck is going on with these sticks?
And there are a couple of theories about this, right?
There are so many theories about this.
This is just a rabbit hole you could fall down on the interwebs?
You could. Let me give you the two popular ones. The first that I've seen a lot of is that somehow Jacob is familiar with genetics, especially recessive genes.
Okay.
And I would say on one level this is true, because all of humanity, we have been breeding and selectively breeding animals. Like
sure.
We took dire wolves and turned them into chihuahuas. Like, that is an impressive feat of humanity.
As you do.
We have domesticated so many different animals over time. I mean, even think about the difference between, pigs and hogs. We've learned how to domesticate, and that is altering them on a genetic level. Like, we've been doing this for thousands and thousands of years. So on one level, I'm okay with it, but sometimes Christians and scholars go super deep into the whole recessive genetic things. Like, he somehow understood exactly how it worked, and I don't think that's the case.
That would be a bit much.
It might be a bit much, but he understood, like, you get a bunch of strong animals together and they make stronger babies. A bunch of weaker animals together make a bunch of weaker babies.
Mm-hmm.
And so he understands how this works, and this is what he does. So there's that possibility. And I'm kind of okay with that. There's also the idea that he's somehow using divination or some type of, like, magic talisman effect or, like, some type of folklore.
Hmm.
Which we have these today, like, like these home remedies that we use sometimes.
Hmm.
Things that really actually have no scientific basis, but...
Dream catchers.
Okay, yeah, even dream catchers or lucky...
In my head, yeah.
I was going to say lucky charms, but
sure.
I can't say that without thinking of the cereal.
Mm. Rabbit's feet.
Right, yeah. We have things like that, and I'm sure there's someone in our church I'll offend here, but the whole, like, organic food craze.
Oh, sure.
There's, like... It's not as good as people think it is. There's really no scientific proof that it's healthier for you. In fact, there's actually some both economic and environmental concerns with
sure.
the organic movement. But because everyone is so concerned and convinced that it's better for you, it's become this huge market share of the food market. But we have these things today. So maybe something was with these sticks, maybe... There's that.
Okay.
There's another theory that I won't go into because I'm sure we have a lot of, minors listening to this, but apparently there's a practice with, sheep herders and vets that they understand that when a sheep is in heat, they have physical signs and physical behavior differences, and somehow the sticks would be used to identify those people.
The sheep.
The animals.
Thanks.
That could be awkward. And I won't say much more than that, just to try to keep this a little PG. but that's just a new theory I just read like a few minutes ago, which is fascinating, and I'm going to have to go study more. But
there you go.
I know, Molly, you grew up around sheep.
Yes, I did.
Can you attest to anything I just said?
No.
Okay. All right.
I know baby lambs are cute.
Baby lambs are cute.
And then they get bigger and stupider and uglier.
And stinky.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, breeding, that's pretty straightforward. You know that you want to breed. This is why you pick the biggest, strongest bulls for cows
sure.
or whatever.
Yeah, that's true.
You want to breed the better cow. When you're judging in 4-H, you're looking for genes that you want to pass on.
That's true.
Yeah.
I do remember my dad would go and buy... a certain ram, and you could only keep it for 2 years, and then you have to sell it and get a new one. And he would always look for like a good ram, and then we'd also like weed out obnoxious sheep, and we did this with our cows too. Like, my dad purposely weeds out like really stubborn cows, and so our herd is actually really easy to work because he gets rid of the ones who are like
sure.
not workable.
But you can actually go back and look at pictures of dog breeds we're familiar with today, like 100, 150 years ago.
Sure.
And they've dramatically changed even just during that time.
Pugs.
Yeah, pugs.
Retro pugs are actually a really cute thing. I was reading an article about this.
We're not getting a retro pug.
I don't want any more dogs.
Okay.
The moose that we have, sort of.
she's a really small baby moose. I'm pretty sure baby moose are bigger than Penny is. Anyway.
Sure.
So that's just... So there's a couple theories on that. And it's important to not get caught up too much in exactly like what the science is behind all this.
Sure.
The question is, why is this story in there? And this is... Jacob has been tricked by Laban, and now Now Jacob is tricking Laban.
Sure.
And how is this?
They're in a cycle here.
They're in a cycle, and how is this going to end? And it ends just like it did with Esau. He has to run. And so it's setting up that story. There's this, that reminds me, I didn't think about this until now. There's this word, wages, throughout this entire story.
Oh, yeah.
From the time
yeah.
he comes to Laban to the time he leaves.
What's going on with that?
Well, and so we talked about this with Bible Basics a little bit. Like, if you see a repeating theme, you have to pay attention because
mm-hmm.
it's not. And, like, wages shows up throughout this entire story. And it's not just Jacob using it. Jacob uses it mostly, but, you know, he wants his wages.
Mm-hmm.
Laban asks Jacob what is his wages. Jacob tells Laban, you've changed my wages, is it 7 times, Rob, or 10? One of those. Maybe more. Like, you've changed my wages all the time. Like, you're always... And, like, Jacob is super concerned with his wages.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel and Leah use the word wages. Like, this fascination with what am I owed? What do I have to have? And you can see this in the personality of Jacob. Like, he's always playing... He always has an angle. He's always working.
He's
always
grasping.
He's grasping. He's trying to prove himself. He's not going to let go.
Trying to get as much as he can.
And it kind of, the whole, like, but at the same time, his family's falling apart. It's highly dysfunctional. His two wives probably hate each other. His kids are caught up in this middle of the relationship, which...
I'll bet that doesn't sound like anybody's life in America.
I'm sure there's no families that can resonate with, you know, having a broken, blended, split,
traumatic-filled
family.
That's, you know, being tensioned because, you know, money, and we need to get more, and we need to have more.
Yeah, none of that, no.
Yeah, that's not applicable to me.
No, you have to be good enough. You have to prove yourself. You have to get good grades. You have to be good at sports. You have to work
sure.
hard. You have to save a bunch of money.
Get a nice house, a nice car.
Yep. You have to prove yourself. Can't let anyone take advantage of you.
Sure.
Like, I'm sure that doesn't speak at all to our culture today.
No, not at all.
And what's fascinating, as we said in the sermon, at the end of Jacob's life, he's like, yeah, I didn't do it right.
It's like, that
my
sucked.
My days were few and evil compared to Abraham. Like, it's not, no. And I think, can you imagine being the dad in the Joseph story? Well, I think about it. So how long was Joseph in Egypt? I wouldn't be surprised if it was 20 years. I don't know if there's a reference exactly how long he was there.
I don't remember off the top of my head.
Okay, but we know he spent...
It must have been at least a while.
Yeah, he spent several years with Potiphar, spent several years in jail, and then by the time the famine hit, so that's 7+ years.
Sure.
And we're not entirely sure how long the story of Joseph's interactions with his brothers go, because remember, they're traveling by foot, you know, hundreds and hundreds of miles. And so whenever they go back home, like they travel to Egypt, they go back home, they stay there for a while until their food runs out again, and then they come back. Like there's these,
mm-hmm.
this takes time. It could be a year easily, I could see.
Mm-hmm.
And then imagine your son's coming back home saying, we found Joseph. And you're like, wait, he was killed, you know, decades ago. And what do you mean you found him? And imagine that story coming up, like, oh, by the way, we tried to kill him, but we settled for selling him as a slave instead. Can you imagine how you would feel as a dad?
pretty stoked.
But, I mean, it like, list off some of the emotions you'd be feeling, like anger, obviously.
Oh, yeah, I'd be pissed.
But then wouldn't you be thinking about how you treated your brother, if you were Jacob?
Mm.
Like, how did you treat Esau? How did you treat your wives? Aren't you somewhat to blame for this whole situation? You let your kids get to this point.
Yeah.
You favored
Joseph.
Yeah.
And made all of them jealous. This
was
kind of your fault.
Done to him.
Sure.
His father favored Esau over him.
Exactly, yeah.
And so he didn't learn. He repeated.
Mm-hmm. And the cycle continues.
Hmm.
Which is fascinating to me because... I think we could all somewhat relate to this with our family and our family backgrounds, but if we, whatever dysfunction that we grew up with, one, we don't like, we hate it, we complain about it, but then we just repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I can think of examples from my family, you know, things that I repeat that it just drove me nuts as a kid. Still drive me nuts. You know, and the question is, you know, is that learned behavior? Is that genetics? I think it's kind of a combination of both nature and nurture.
Yeah, there's so much that's caught.
Yeah.
That we don't realize we've caught it until, you know, we're put into a situation. And oftentimes it's when we move into a new relationship, like marriage, or you become a father yourself, or whatever the case may be, and you respond to a situation that you haven't been exposed to before. And like for me, I was shocked that my response was just like my dad or just like my mom.
Sure. I think as parents, we've all had those moments where like, wow, I sounded like my parents there.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, no. Like, oh, no.
No.
Like the same way that they responded to you, they just ticked you off as a kid. You just did that to your kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of this, understanding our natural proclivities, like our natural genetic makeup or the way we're made, like we are going to be susceptible to things that other people aren't susceptible to, and stronger to things that other people aren't stronger at. And yeah, what were we talking about? I forget what train we're on.
Wages.
Oh,
yeah.
So Jacob is super concerned with his wages, getting what is his due, proving himself, not letting anyone take advantage of him, making sure that he's strong at any expense possible. And at the end of his life, he's like, my youngest favorite son, my other boys wanted to kill. And they thought it was a gracious thing to sell him as a slave instead. This is the family that I have made.
Sure.
And it makes me think of Paul in Romans. I think it's Romans 6 where Paul says the wages of sin is death. I wonder if Paul as a rabbi is, when he uses the word wages.
If he's alluding to that.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Work hard, prove yourself, get what you can, collect.
Sin is usually just the perversion of something that was genuinely
sure.
good. So it's the... I want, so it's the focus on myself instead of the focus on other people. So if you were to switch that and focus on other people, then the wages of that is life. And like,
yeah,
duality of what are you working for? Is it for yourself or is it for the common good?
Mm-hmm. All right, and this is a story back in Genesis 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Mm-hmm.
Adam and Eve, they eat of the fruit, and God says when they do that, they shall surely die on that day, but they don't. And we like to say, well, it was a spiritual death. I'm like, no, it just says you will die. So what does God mean by that? How does death look like in the story? And the first death we see is Genesis 4 when Cain kills his brother Abel. Because Cain can't handle the idea of his brother doing something that was approved of and his job wasn't good enough. Like, he couldn't live with that. Which sounds a lot like Jacob.
Hmm.
I see a little bit of pufferfish in Jacob.
Hmm.
You know, he's described as
a
man.
Is that a fat joke?
No, he's described as a man of peace in comparison to Esau, who was a man that would go hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jacob is this guy that stays in the house, close to mom's skirt. But as you're describing, like, this fight in him for his wages and... Like, I just picture this little guy that's trying to be big, you know, that's always trying to, I guess I resonate with that from the standpoint that I was such a scrawny kid that the fight was like, I wanted to fight, because I felt like if I didn't fight, I was just going to be taken advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
And it caused problems years later in my own family.
Mm-hmm. I think of Jacob wrestling with this random man that shows up and how Jacob will not let go until he's blessed. And I feel like Jacob's entire life, he's trying to get the blessing. Like, he had to steal his dad's blessing. He wasn't giving it to him. He had to steal it. And so he's always trying to earn his blessing, which isn't how blessings work. It's given. But how many of us how many of our dysfunctions that we have as individuals come from not having the blessing of our parents in some fashion?
Well, Rachel, when she's pregnant with them, God spoke to her and said the younger will or the older will serve the younger. And so I think when they were born, she set about trying to make it happen instead of just trusting God to make it happen. And so I can imagine her being like, I know, just, it's okay. You're going to be in charge someday, talking to Jacob, instead of, like, just letting the
letting
story
it naturally progress.
Yeah. And so he kept thinking, I need to fight, because obviously my dad prefers Esau over me. And so having to fight for that.
Hmm. And even the division that you see between the two sides there with Rebecca and Jacob and Esau and Isaac,
mm-hmm.
you see amplified in Jacob's sons and his wives. And they're, you know, it's like it's multiplied. It's now, and at some point, God's going to have to, if God doesn't redeem this, it just gets worse and worse and worse.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good segue to where I want to finish. So we touched on the end of Jacob's life in the near the end of Genesis, where Jacob's boys take him back to Egypt so he can see his long lost son. And there's this reference where Joseph says to his brothers, "What you meant for evil, God meant for good," and that's such a powerful statement, not because. One, you see Joseph being the first in this immediate family saying, I'm not going to get my revenge. I'm going to trust God. And yeah, you obviously hurt me, but I don't have to rise up against you. I don't have to earn my wage. I don't have to prove my blessing. What was that, babe?
I just remembered part of the story I read from an article on Chabad a while ago.
Uh-huh.
It's between Judah. So they were saying that Joseph was intending to keep Benjamin and send the rest of his brothers and have nothing to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
But Judah's response changed, like, made it like, oh, you actually are approaching this differently.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You're not selling your younger brother into slavery. You were willing to take his place.
Because yeah. that's the moment where Joseph, he can't control himself,
yeah,
himself anymore.
Crying.
He starts crying because he realizes they've changed.
Yeah. But when the tribes split, Judah and Benjamin go. And I love that. Like, the fact that Judah fought for his younger brother, and they fight together now. And I just love that. Get a little choked up. I'm okay.
Because that's what we want for our boys, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Like, we want them to fight for each other and with each other, not against each other. So, anyway, I forget what I was on. Joseph.
Sorry.
Oh, so Joseph says what you meant for good, God meant. Sorry, what you meant for evil, God meant for good. And so it's not just a powerful phrase because he's the one that's breaking the cycle,
mm-hmm.
This endless cycle of. Because throughout Genesis, there's always these twos, and they're often brothers. Not always, but they're often brothers. Like Cain and Abel. The older kills the younger. Ishmael and Isaac. Ishmael is sent away, just like Cain was, and then at the very next story, God asks Abraham to kill Isaac. So like, yeah, these twos throughout the story, Jacob and Esau being another one. And there's always this rivalry. There's always this trying to protect yourself and trying to take advantage of the other and keeping what you have and taking what other people have.
Hmm.
And then Joseph is the first one to say, enough. And so when you follow that line throughout the story, what you realize is when Adam and Eve ate of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, the ending of Genesis, you have good and evil come back again. Like they're used in the same sentence for the first time. When Joseph says, he finally learned a lesson that humanity unlearned back in Genesis 3.
Mm.
That we don't have to hide or blame or protect ourselves to keep ourselves safe and secure at any expense, that we can forgive. And so there's this thread throughout that. And then after this, Jacob, his eyesight's going. He can still see. So part of the thing we have to think about when we hear Jacob's eyesight going is we have to think of Isaac. Because Isaac, at the end of his life, he's blind, so he goes to bless his sons. So there's some parallels happening here in this story. So Jacob goes to bless the sons of Joseph, these grandsons that he's never seen. And so Joseph takes the boys to Jacob, and he puts the older in this spot and the younger in this spot. And Jacob puts his hands on the boys to go bless them. And then Jacob does this weird thing where he crosses his hands. So now the hand that was supposed to be on the younger is on the older, and the hand that was supposed to be on the older is now on the younger. Mm-hmm. And Joseph's like, he knows his dad's eyesight isn't that great. And so he's like, no, dad, that's not the way this is supposed to work. This is the older, this is the younger. And Jacob says, I know, my son, I know. And I'm pretty sure that's a verbatim quote. So imagine, as a father, I imagine saying something like that to my boy. Like, I know, son, I know. Like, there's this deep emotion and meaning and thoughtfulness to it. Were you smiling because of the footsteps above?
Yeah, there's a herd of elephants right above us right now.
If you don't know, our office is below some type of active therapy business, and so they're always jumping and playing and throwing and
yeah, they're working with
banging.
Kids with, I think, developmental
disabilities. Which is awesome. I'm happy for them. Sometimes it makes it distract. Sometimes we get distracted down here.
I just sit down here and wonder, what are they doing that a bunch of 5-year-olds sound like a bunch of elephants?
I think they have a bowling alley up there.
That might be.
Anyway, so I picture myself talking to my son saying, I know, my son, I know. Like when he's having a hard time or he's really confused or he says something that's true, but it's not always true. I don't know if that makes sense. And you're like, I know. If my oldest son comes home and people were being mean to him and picking on him, and he's like, it's not nice, it's not fair. And I say something like, I know, my son, I know. It's not just I understand. It's I understand where you're coming from. I can see why you're having a problem with this. And
it's almost like I was there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
and
I stole this, but this is how it should go.
Yeah, because I think one of the lessons Jacob finally learned at the end of his life is you don't. The hierarchy that we often place and the divisions that we often place on our social world, God does not recognize. Because you're older, because you're stronger, because you're smarter, because you have more possessions, because whatever it might be, whatever it is in our society that we think is better, God looks at it and says, I give no preference to that.
Sure.
That's not how I work. Which makes sense, because look at the family God chooses here to save the world. Like, it's broken.
And they definitely have their share of screw-ups.
And shortcomings.
And shortcomings.
We didn't do that, did we?
We forgot the shortcomings of Paul.
Oh, I'll have to end with that.
Yeah, you know, the... who should serve whom... You know, the Behor, the whole idea of the Behor was to protect the family.
Sure.
It's actually a rule of service. Whenever Jesus was asked, who's the greatest, he would say, if you want to be the greatest, then you need to serve all.
Hmm.
And, I'm the youngest, I'm the oldest guy on the staff. But I don't.
36 is not old, Rob.
God bless you.
The
Lord bless
you. I know,
you
my son, I know.
But I you're the senior pastor. I mean, that's your role, and it's a role that I don't want.
Neither do I.
And
the other day you introduced me like, oh, this is the senior pastor of the church I work at. I was just like looking at you, I'm like, I'm sure they're confused.
Well, I think it's probably because, watching our two children, and our oldest wants to be in charge, wants to be set the rules, and our younger one usually goes along with it. So, I mean, how many times is that God being like, yeah, they get this. Like, they understand what they're supposed to do. So maybe we need to reverse roles so that you can get it too.
The last shall be least.
Mm-hmm.
The last shall be first, and first shall be last.
Yeah.
The greatest shall be least, the least shall be greatest.
Yeah, so, being the oldest child, like, I...
Are we all oldest in here?
Oh my gosh, we are.
We are.
We're a bunch of whores.
Wow. That's crazy.
That is funny.
Yeah,
it was a wrestle for me, you know, and my brother and I, like, we could have been Jacob and Esau for much of our time. I just the way we competed and
mm-hmm.
and whatnot and how much conflict there was. And when my mom passed, my sister-in-law was wondering how was this gonna all go down with the you know, the splitting of the of the estate and I told my brother, I'm like, you are way more valuable to me than anything in this house. And if you want it, it's yours. And she says she enjoyed watching us go through the house and going, you should take that. And the next thing, you should take that. And the next thing, you should, you know, like, but it took us 40.
In some settings, that's a curse.
Yeah.
You could take it all.
I don't
have to deal with
it. It took us 45 years, but we got to the point where the other person was way more valuable. And there are times when my brother should be out in front. Like, he's a phenomenal leader.
Mm-hmm.
And there's things I'm like, hey, will you take lead on this? And there's other times he goes, hey, will you take lead on this? As we, you know, patriarch
mm-hmm.
our family together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think throughout the book of Genesis, you see this. You see the Bahor often violating their power and their position. You know, Cain should be caring for his family and protecting it. Instead, he violates that.
Protecting himself,
yeah. Even with Ishmael, like, when Abraham ends up sending Hagar and Ishmael away, like, that's not, I think, what in God's ideal plan.
No. But, I mean, can you imagine being Ishmael? I am the Bahor.
Yeah.
Oh, crap.
And for years, Sarah and Abraham thought he was the Bahor.
Yeah.
Like, we think Abraham had Ishmael, and, like, God, like, showed up and was like, nope, that's not how, no, he's an older boy by now.
He's a teenager.
Yeah, like, for years, Abraham's like, all right, I got the kid that God promised me, sweet. And then God takes his sweet time, you know, after he's probably fallen in love with this kid, after he's like, nope, sorry, this is not the kid I promised you. Because it wasn't just Abraham's promise, it was Sarah's promise.
Yeah.
And so even in that story, like, there's this violation that happens. Like, this is not how family works. And God goes out of his way to care for Hagar and Ishmael.
Mm-hmm.
We know Ishmael is still part of the story, and it's somehow, like, an extended part of the family.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the Jacob and Esau story, we read that Esau goes to Ishmael to get a wife.
Well, didn't they say that, like, Isaac and Ishmael buried?
And Isaac and Ishmael buried their father, yeah.
Father.
So, like,
you don't
Ishmael just
do
doesn't
that.
Just disappear.
Yeah.
Yeah. And God gives him pretty much almost the same blessing that he gives to Isaac.
It actually comes sooner.
And it comes first. Throughout the story, you see the Bahor, the first that should be caring for the rest, and they often just, they're more interested in maintaining their firstness, their priority in line.
Sure. Well, you see that with Esau. It's the, you know, what good's my inheritance if
I die?
If I die of hunger.
Yeah. Are you going to, was he actually going to die? No.
No.
Like, come on. Jesus fasted 40 days. You can last, you know, a little while.
Yeah.
Come on now.
Which, that story confuses me. I wonder if he was gone for a long time. And, like, I wonder if he really was starving.
Maybe.
But I've been hungry before. But if you're like, I'm like, hey, Rob, that burrito that's sitting right there looks really good. And you're like, cool. I need your house for this burrito. I'm like, what good is my house if I die? Like, I don't know. Just in my mind, the story doesn't make sense. So,
yeah. He's either got to be really, really hungry or doesn't really value his inheritance that much.
Yeah. And his role.
Yeah.
Which is funny because then when Jacob comes back, something changed in Esau. Like, there's a whole part of the story that we don't know. Like, Esau obviously has forgiven his brother. Esau offers men to protect his brother. and there's no other conflict we read of.
He's assumed the role of Bahor for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think he understands, and he still remembers that his inheritance, the two portion of inheritance that he would have got is still going to Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
And he's come to terms with that. I wonder if one of his wives just smacked some sense into him. Like, yeah, you were an idiot. I don't know. Anyway. Well, I'm sure that's plenty of time.
Yeah, we've been rambling for a pretty good amount of time here, but we should talk about our Paul's shortcomings for this week.
No. Jeez. I can think of one. Rob called it like immediately after the sermon.
Yeah.
We do know how long. I said from stage, I don't know how long Jacob was with Laban.
Okay.
Minimum 14 years, could have been as long as 21 years. And then Rob comes up after the sermon and is like, FYI, Jacob tells Laban, I've worked for you for 20 years. I was like, oh, okay, well, that's part of the story.
Okay. Because you got 7 with Leah, 7 for Rachel.
Yeah.
And then 6 in Canaan?
Yeah, it's interesting to me that it's 7 years, which is a complete time. He doesn't complete the time. He fails before.
And he runs.
He runs.
Which is what Jacob does. If he can't control the situation, he runs from it.
So where does it get completed at then?
It maybe doesn't get completed?
I think it gets completed with Esau. I mean, I think he finally comes to terms. When he chooses to give his brother a gift, that is Jacob not being the Jacob of old. Like, I see the switch flip, you know, like God comes and meets with Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I think there's 2 encounters between Esau and his uncle. And I think we see him actually get it, because Esau says, no, I've got plenty. And Jacob's like, no, this is yours. This is a gift. You can't reject it.
I still wonder, and that's is he still trying to buy his brother's love? One. But also, I'm impressed with Esau. He's like, no, I have enough. Like, that, just that perspective. Like, no, I'm good. Like, seriously, I'm good. In fact, I have a bunch of men here that could protect you if you need it. So, I don't know. As far as some other shortcomings, I know I struggled with names this Sunday because there's a lot of names, and I flipped. Especially Rachel and Rebecca. That is just hard for me. I think it's hard for a lot of people. I've noticed a couple of us today has already flipped them. But, like, I know I flipped names a lot.
Sure.
And so I'm sure I made several mistakes when it came to names this last weekend.
I didn't get any fiery emails though, so I don't think there was anything too crazy.
Okay, good.
There is a small chiasm, if you just want to know what chiasms look like. Genesis 47, verses 7 through 10. It said Joseph brought his father Jacob and presented him to Pharaoh, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Jacob, now how many years have you lived? So Jacob said to Pharaoh, the years of my sojourning are 130. Few and unpleasant have been my years of my life, nor have they attained the years that my fathers lived during the days of my sojourning. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from his presence.
Yeah, so you have the 2 blessings that happen.
You got presence on the outside, you got the 2 blessings, you got the sojournings, and right in the middle is evil.
Yep. I like I don't know what version we're using, but I like how they translated that unpleasant instead of evil. I don't think it's the right translation, but I like that. Like, my life sucked. It's probably a good way of translating that. That reminds me too, like, in that story, they call him Jacob. And whenever you see someone's name change, after that point when their name change, you have to pay attention to what name is given they use.
Sure.
So like after Peter's name is changed, when Jesus calls him Simon, you have to pay attention to that. When Jesus calls him Peter, you have to pay attention to that. When Jesus calls him Simon Peter, you pay attention to that.
Because he's making a point with the name.
He's making a point with the name. And
yeah.
And you'll see throughout Jacob's life after his name is changed. If I recall right, at first his new name is rarely used. And there's these moments where it is used.
Where he gets it.
Either he gets it, or maybe he's in the act of wrestling with man or with God. Like he's in a struggle.
Mm.
And so like paying attention to that, and because Jacob and Joseph's life take up the vast majority of Genesis, so like paying attention to those stories is important. When is Jacob being a trickster? When is Jacob honestly wrestling with people and with God? Anyway, I just want to point that out. I think we covered enough.
Yeah.
We want to talk a little bit more about the psychology of vulnerability and intimacy, but we didn't have time. We could maybe try to do that next week. No, next week we have plenty of fodder, don't we?
We might. We'll see.
We'll see. Any other closing ideas? I have to vacate my butt.
Rob is hungry and wants to get back to that burrito.
Mm-hmm.
Give me something to eat, Rob, lest I die. Don't smack, please.
I want your house.
Oh,
all right,
man.
Well, until next week, Logan.
Yeah, thanks for joining us on another episode of Footnotes.
Yes.
You guys have a great week, and keep diving into the text.
Bye.
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 You've been listening to Footnotes on the Mission Ridge podcast. For more information about Mission Ridge, please visit our website at missionridge.church. Thanks for tuning in. We hope the rest of your week is straight up hashtag blessed, and that you'll join us again next week for more Footnotes.